All right, we finally have reached our final division in the Podium Gate podcast previews. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Jared Dubin. Jared, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Got my coffee. Got ready to tackle, I believe, the Southwest Division, if I'm remembering correctly. Sorry, the Northwest Division.
No, you were right.
Southwest Division.
Southwest Division. You were right the first time.
Yeah, I always forget which one is the Southwest and which one is the Northwest. We're doing the division with San Antonio in it today.
Yes. We've talked a lot of hours about basketball divisions over these past couple weeks. I don't know what made me look this up last night, and it was early this morning, I should say. It was at like 4 in the morning. Since the four of the teams from the Southwest Division made the playoffs, so four out of five teams. Since 2004-05, we've been in this division alignment. That's 10 seasons. Eight times four of five teams have made it to the playoffs in one division, and then once all five in the Central in 2005-06, all five teams made it. I'm wondering if we could see that again this year from the Southwest.
I think it's more likely than not, right?
It all depends on the trajectory of the Pelicans, which whether we think they're going to make.
I meant four out of five is more likely than.
Yeah, I mean four. Yeah, I would assume that they get four out of five again. The question is whether they get
something would have to go wrong for any of San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, or Memphis to not make it. I think.
Yeah, I think the least likely to miss it out of those would be Dallas, but as of now, I still expect them to be in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about it before. I think the playoff team from last year that drops out, if it's anyone, is Portland. You know, I guess obviously we'll see what happens, but I think that the four Southwest teams at least are getting in again.
Yes, now since I brought up my stupid meaningless stat that really has no bearing on anything, let's start the Southwest Division with the team that Dallas lost to in the first round of the NBA playoffs. The NBA champion San Antonio Spurs, they went 62-20. Greg Popovich is entering his 19th year as head coach. Their offensive rating last year was 6th, defensive rating 4th, and they played at a pace that was good for 12th. Starting lineup, Tiago Splitter, Tim Duncan, Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, Parker. Where do you rank that among the best starting lineups in the NBA? Is that the best one?
Probably. You know, just off the top of my head, I can't think of any that's definitively better. Not necessarily in terms of pure talent, but just the way they play together. They're going on three seasons now with this starting lineup. They're so tough to beat. I mean, that Parker-Duncan pick and roll at the elbow, and then everything that flows off of it. You know, Green sprinting from corner to corner, Kawhi on the wings and the corners. Tiago has become a very good pick and roll player in his own right. And I mean, you know, I talked about this with Zach Harper on the Quovadimus podcast a couple days ago. That Parker elbow jumper it's impossible to stop. When he wrong foots a defender near the elbow and takes that two dribble jumper. And when he's making that, which is more often than not, I mean, with how many other options they already have on the court and how well they move the ball, you can't stop them. You just can't.
Their bench this year is almost the exact same as last year. Patty Mills, Corey Joseph, Manu, Diaw, Bonner.
But Mills had shoulder surgery, so he's going to miss some time.
Yeah, he won't be back right away, so Joseph's going to be thrust into a little bit of a bigger role. Bellinelli, Baines, Jeff Pendergraf, Ayers is what he calls himself now, I think, which confused
Ayers,
me.
Ayers, yeah.
I've played basketball against him a bunch of times over at the ASU Rec Center. Kyle Anderson. Since there's really not many changes, what do you think the rookie Kyle Anderson is going to contribute this year?
Well, before the draft, I did sort of like a mock draft, and the one for the Spurs, I said, they were picking future finals MVP. So, Kyle Anderson, future finals MVP. I remember, like, after he got drafted, somehow he saw that thing and tweeted it out. And he was like, that'd be nice, or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this briefly when we did Oklahoma City. You know, now that Mitch McGarry got hurt, and then Kevin Durant got hurt, you would think Oklahoma City really regrets not taking a guy who could actually play and contribute this year with the 29th pick, like Kyle Anderson, and letting him fall right to San Antonio's lap. I mean, it's a guy who's just, you know, a really, really, really good passer, good rebounder, 6'9". I mean, he's very slow. Like, you know, we saw that at UCLA, and we're going to see that even more. There's a reason people call him slow-mo, but this is a guy with great court vision, and he's going to fit really well into what they want to do if he gets a chance to play.
I hope Pop gives him a shot, because he is fun to watch play basketball. I got to see him, not a ton, but a decent amount at West when he was at UCLA. Reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. My reasons to be excited, I just wrote everything. They're just fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've come a long way from the days when, you know, people correctly thought the Spurs were boring. Over the last few years, there's been sort of a groundswell of, hey, the Spurs aren't boring. They actually play the best basketball in the league. And that is still as true today as it was then.
And there's varying opinions on it, but Greg Popovich entertains me greatly, and I get all salty.
God, yes.
Have you ever asked him a question?
No. I've only been to cover two Spurs games. The first one, I was writing a profile on some guys on the Knicks bench, and the second one, I got sick at halftime and didn't go to the locker room after the game.
Like puking in the arena sec?
Yeah.
I've done that at a baseball game before covering it. Never a basketball game.
I get sick around like the same two or three times every year. And that just happened to be one of those times. So
at least you have like a legitimate reason. I drank too much the night before and had to cover an afternoon baseball game and then did not do well in the stadium. That was not one of my better moments.
This year I'm gonna ask him something. I'm honestly, I want to get popped and have him look at me like I have eight heads.
Oh, he's one of the two coaches I just stood there silently and haven't had the balls to ask anything to. Him and when Phil Jackson was coaching the Lakers. I just kind of stood there and kind of hoped neither of them noticed me.
They don't come to New York until, like, March, I don't think. Well, they come to Brooklyn in early December, but they don't come to play the Knicks until March. So if I don't work up the nerve in December, hopefully by March I'll be able to do it.
Yeah, you have two chances for it. Make sure you get that recorded for us so you can post it if he gets you.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry, there will be plenty of people there to laugh at me if it happens.
Reasons to be worried outside of Jared getting popped. Age is the one thing.
Duncan. Yeah, but you know what? We say that every year, and it never matters. Like, they didn't play. They were the first team in modern NBA history to not have anyone play 30 minutes a game last year. These guys know what they're doing to manage the minutes, manage the health of all the players in the team. I'm honestly, at this point, not really worried about their age.
The way Pop does it, I was writing a fantasy basketball story for a website last night, and I was basically doing targets and guys to avoid, and exactly because of that, like Kawhi Leonard's going in like the first round, and I'm just like, no, you can't draft him there because you just don't know what his role is going to be on this team, and if Popovich, and this is leads right into the storyline, how much does Popovich let Kawhi expand his game this year?
Yeah, I mean, he expanded it a little bit last year, you know, doing more off the bounce, things like that. And I think he'll continue to do that. But I don't think that you're going to see them shift the focal point of the offense from Tony Parker to him just yet. You know, Parker's still in like his early 30s. He can still be sort of the main guy that's running the show there. And the, one of the reasons Kawhi's been so efficient is because he's been sort of a supplementary offensive player. Obviously, he's wildly talented, but you also don't want to give him too much offensive responsibility and sap some of his energy that he uses to be one of the handful of best perimeter defenders in the league.
When you look at importance of the things that Kawhi does, it's pretty fair to say that the most important aspect of his game is what he is able to do at the defensive end.
Yeah, I would say it goes defense and then shooting and then everything else.
Yeah, I'm with you, definitely with you on that. The other team, well, there's two other teams in Texas in this division. Let's go to Houston.
Wait a minute.
Oh, not done yet. Not allowed.
See, how are we going to talk about the Spurs and not talk about, you know, hardwood paroxysm contributor Matt Bonner?
I said his name earlier.
I mean, I think we need to discuss sandwiches.
More in depth.
Vermont and, you know, random playoff starts that come out of nowhere because Pop wants to draw Serge Ibaka out of the paint.
That was amazing. That was Popovich's move. That was, might have been the best coaching decision of the playoffs.
God, he's the best. Pop and Bonner.
How did that end up happening?
How did what end up happening?
Bonner contributing, not Pop deciding to start Bonner.
Well, the Duncan splitter pairing, the one team that it hasn't been uber successful against over the last few years is Oklahoma City.
No. Answering the wrong question. More important things. How did he end up contributing to HP?
AP, Anand Pandian, I think that's how you say his last name, knows him from, you know, being New England buddies. So he's friendly with both Matt and Luke Bonner.
Ah, and then he has an interest in doing media stuff after his career's over, and he saw it as a good opportunity or something like that?
I'm honestly not sure if he does. He's just a super nice guy, and one day he brought up in the email thread that he thought he could get Bonner to do sort of a mailbag type thing where we ask readers to ask him some questions, and he's been kind enough to do that, I think, 3 times now, and it's been fantastic every time.
All right, if we were going to choose other random players around the league to be involved with the website, who would you choose?
I think that Matt would make it just be Marc Gasol and Tyrus Thomas.
Tyrus Thomas. That was not a name I was expecting.
Tyrus Thomas is like the most HP player in the history of the NBA.
It's scary how much I like that kid coming out of college.
I was not big on him, which makes me very un-HP, which I should be saying as one of the editors.
I loved him coming out of college, and I'm pretty sure I made a bet with someone that he would make an all-star team. That someone doesn't listen to this podcast, so I won't have to give them their free lunch. But which I'm going to owe you money for a bet, too. Damn it, I'm going to owe you drinks.
Which bet was that again?
The Redskins, because Robert Griffin III got hurt immediately after I made the bet with you, which I should have figured.
You know what? If you didn't bring that up, I honestly would have forgotten.
See, I'll buy you your drinks. That's fine. This other person, I don't want to buy him lunch, and there's no way he remembers it. I made it with him sitting at an ASU game, one of the James Harden years. Speaking of James Harden, I think we talked enough about Matt Bonner. We'll go to his team, the Rockets. 54-28 last year, lost in the first round to the Blazers. Kevin McHale is entering his sixth season as the head coach. That's crazy. I can't believe he's been there so long.
Sixth season? Holy crap.
Right? It doesn't seem like that, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Offensive rating, 108.6, fourth overall. Defensive rating, 103.1, 12th. Pace, 98.81. That was fifth. Starting lineup. Beverly, Harden, Ariza, Jones, Howard. Do you see them taking any sort of drop-off replacing Parsons with Ariza, or do you think they're going to be fine?
I think it's more of a cumulative drop-off where, you know, they didn't just lose Parsons this summer. They lost Lynn and Oshik, too. You know, that's three of their top seven or eight guys from last year. And, you know, now the backup big man is like Donuts, Joey Dorsey, and Jeff Adrian. You know, not exactly an inspiring crew. I think Ariza will work out fine for them. He certainly upgrades their defense on the wing. Whether he can shoot well in a non-contract year remains to be seen, but you would think playing off of James Harden and Dwight Howard would help him do that. I think they're going to be fine. They'll make the playoffs. They'll be in the mix. But I do think there will be a little bit of a drop-off just because they don't have the depth they did last year.
Here's my angle with Lynn, and I looked up some numbers with it. Basically, he played 714 minutes with Harden on the bench last year and 1,340 with him on the court. So that average, based on the amount of games that Lynn played, that basically averaged out to 10 minutes a game without Harden and 21 with. So really, and Lynn's numbers were significantly better when he played without Harden. So really, you only need to replace 10 minutes of optimal Lynn. The other 20 minutes when he was playing with Harden, I think, are pretty easily replaced with someone that complements Harden better.
Somewhat. You could talk me into that, I guess. It's more of a cumulative thing. You know, now instead of Isaiah Cannon instead of Lynn playing 20 minutes with Harden and 10 minutes by himself, you probably have Isaiah Cannon playing, you know, 15 minutes by himself and 15 minutes with Harden, which, I mean, I think Isaiah Cannon is going to be good, but in his first year with a real role, you may see some struggles there.
You could also use Troy Daniels. He's the type of player that can play off Harden. I know that defense is a drop-off from Lynn, but offensively, with his shooting, it allows him to play off the ball and let Harden handle it.
Do you really want Harden running the point?
He essentially does in a way at times.
Yeah, but their offense gets stagnant enough as it is with as much as he controls the ball and sort of... It's amazing how stagnant their offense gets considering all the different guys they have there that can create. It's very strange.
I could lean on Troy Dan... Terrence Jones a little bit more in times when they don't have Beverly on the court, and we'll try and let him expand his game a little bit.
Listen, you don't have to convince me to lean on TJ more. I started the Terrence Jones bandwagon. That's not a joke. I've been on the Terrence Jones bandwagon since before he was at Kentucky.
Where was he before Kentucky?
I love that kid. I think he's going to be good.
Wait, where was he before Kentucky, if you're taking claim to that?
In high school. He's Portland.
Is he a Portland? So he's a Portland guy.
Yeah.
I remember stuff with his recruiting now. He was in the mix to go to Washington, right?
I don't remember that. That could be right. But I remember, seeing him play in high school just a couple times and like highlight tape before he went to Kentucky. And I love that Kentucky team too, those 2 years. He was my guy and still is. I wrote this thing early last season about the Rockets power forward situation and why Jones needed the guy. Never wound up running for, one reason or another, but yeah.
I think getting the backup big to be able to give Howard his 14 to 13 minutes off a night is the biggest question mark with this roster. That whether it be Joey Dorsey, Jeff Adrian, who's more of a power forward than a center. So it's got to be Dorsey that's able to play 10 to 12 minutes a night.
You don't think it's going to be Donuts?
Who the heck's Donuts? Why do I not know him?
Nafis Motiejunas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if he's a center. Now I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. They have so many bodies that they can throw at that situation that eventually someone will separate themselves from the pack.
And I just trust that Daryl Morey, one thing he's done very well over the years is find talent in the cracks that no one else has been able to see.
Yeah, they've got, what's his name now, too? Kostas.
The dude that the Knicks traded it to Portland in the Ray Felton trade. He's looked pretty decent in the preseason.
Yeah, a pick, two prospects, money for Ray Felton and Kurt Thomas.
At least we had a cute bulldog for a couple of years.
Ugh, all right, we're not talking about the Knicks. Yeah, but they have some interesting wing guys, between Ariza, Garcia, Kostas, Harden, Terry, Daniels, Beverly, Cannon, even Ish Smith, Nick Johnson. They've got a lot of guys that they can throw out there and play a lot of interesting lineups.
Outside of obnoxious quotes to the media, can we really still call Jason Terry interesting for what he does on a basketball court?
No. When he was in the Pearson KG trade to the Nets, people were like, oh man, they got this KG and Terry. And I was like, why are you lumping Terry in with those guys? He's not good.
Yeah, I was one of the people who thought that was a good signing for Boston, and then as that year played out, I was like, whoops, made a mistake on that one.
Yeah, a lot of people did, I've been wrong about plenty of things in my time, don't worry, but Jason Terry being bad was not one of them.
Yeah, as that year went on, I was like, I accepted it. I was just like, okay, wrong about that, move on, and know he's dead weight for the rest of his career. That was a weird trade. I didn't completely understand what the point was behind acquiring Terry.
Who knows?
On to the Memphis Grizzlies. Record 50-32, but lost in the first round to the Thunder. Would have been fun to see them playing a Game 7 with Zebo, but he had to elbow or punch people in the face, whatever he did. Dave Jorger's entering year two. Their offensive rim... It was. Did I say his name really wrong?
Jaeger.
Jaeger, like the drink.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
What? How do they do like promotions at the game? Like they have like free shots when he calls a timeout or something. There's got to be something they do that's cool there.
I would think if it's in Memphis, they're probably just serving Tennessee whiskey.
That would make sense. Tennessee whiskey in Tennessee. Yeah. Offensive rate. Their offense was kind of better than I thought it was. 16th.
It's sort of miraculous to me that they won 50 games last year, considering how long Gasol was out and how they didn't really start playing well at all until late December. But there was sort of the controversy with Jaeger early in the summer. But it seems like they're pretty committed to it now. I really love this team just because, Mike Conley is one of my favorite players in the league. His hesitation dribble when he takes a screen from Gasol to Zebo, because they're so big and he's so tiny, he does that little hesitation and then sort of jets straight into the paint and you can't stop it. Then he puts up that righty floater. Oh, I love it. They get really good depth on the wing now with Vince and Quincy Pondexter are coming back from injury. This is a team that, and so I was reading Simmons and Zach Lowe's lead pass rankings yesterday, and Zach put out there that some teams' internal projections have Memphis as the team most likely to fall out of the playoffs, and I really just can't see that. I think there's too much talent here. Too much defense, and they even added an injection of shooting and playmaking on the wing. I really can't see them falling out unless Zebo takes a major step back.
So, yeah, along with Zebo and Conley in the starting lineup, you obviously have Marc Gasol and Tony Allen. There's already reports that Tayshaun Prince isn't going to start this year. Who are they going to – is it going to be Pondexter that takes his place?
If Tayshaun doesn't start, I think it would either be Pondexter or Courtney Lee. I'm pretty sure they want Vince to be in that sixth man role, so I don't think it'll be him. I mean, Tayshaun shouldn't start. Like, at this point, he's not a useful enough player to be getting starters' minutes. Something has gone wrong if he's playing a lot.
With their wing depth, if Jordan Adams is halfway decent, and even if he isn't, you can argue that Prince probably shouldn't even play anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty clearly the fifth best guy of that group. Behind Tony, Lee, Vince, and Pondexter.
Yeah, and now...
He can't shoot, and he doesn't have that sort of funky post-up game working for him anymore. And at this point, the defense isn't at a level... Like, he's still a solid defender, but it's not at a level where it justifies having him on the court as much as he is like Tony Allen's is.
Those wings leads right into my reasons to be excited, and it's something you touched on, the additional shooting. They shot 14.6 threes last season per game when you adjusted it for pace. They lost.
Yeah, this is sort of a ongoing thing for them now. They don't shoot threes. That's just how it's been for the last maybe 4 or 5 years since they sort of brought this group together. Obviously, a lot of that stems from the fact that they played very slow. A lot of it stems from the fact that they based their offense around, you know, Gasol and Zebo post-ups and sort of that Conley-Gasol pick-and-roll at the elbow, where a lot of times it's Conley driving in or Mark getting a free-throw line jumper. But with Pondexter coming back, with Courtney Lee being there the whole season, and with Vince being there now, and even with Jordan Adams, if he gets minutes, they should shoot more threes this year at least.
Yeah, I mean, they lost Miller and Bayless, who accounted for 5.2 of those last year. Miller shot them very well, 46%. Bayless, 30%. Not very good. Pondexter, when he was healthy last year, he was taking three a game in about 18 minutes. Only shot 32%, but the season before, he was shooting 39%. Carter took 4.8 the last two seasons in Memphis, and as you said, a full season of Courtney Lee. There's no reason with when you add in Conley that they shouldn't average more towards 18 threes a game compared to those 14, and that should help boost up their offensive rating, not only from the extra threes, but maybe a little bit better spacing.
And listen, if they don't do that, you could always just blame Bino.
He is there. Do you think is... I mean, he's their backup point guard now, right?
I don't know. I think Calathes is pretty good.
What happened with Calathes? Wasn't there something about him going to Greece and then he didn't end up going to Greece? What happened there?
He got suspended for the performance-enhancing drug policy.
That's right. Okay.
He claimed it was some sort of supplement that was not PEDs. You know, if you ask me, I hope it was Propecia because his bald spot is freaking horrible. Between him and Kufis, this team has the worst hair in the league. Like, those two guys need to just shave their heads. Like, you have a massive bald spot on the back of your head. And not like Manu Ginobili style where, you know, you can look good rocking it. These dudes need to shave their heads. Like, just get it over with already.
I could never shave my head. I would rock whatever hair I have till it's all the way gone. I'm not doing it.
Oh, I made the executive decision about 4 or 5 years ago now, and it was the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah, I'm keeping...
You also have to have, like, the right shaped head for it. If you have a weirdly shaped head, you're going to look super dumb.
I've never had even a buzz cut. I've always had, like, real hair on my head. So I don't even know how, like, if I have a weirdly shaped head.
Yeah. Marcus and Nikola just need to shake their heads.
That's the Podium Gate podcast fashion advice for the week. That I don't think anyone else needs anything more from us. It really is funny that like bloggers take like I see how bloggers and people make fun of what people the basketball players wear. Like I see how the people who cover the Suns are dressed when they are at the game. They have no right to comment on anything fashion wise.
The Knicks beat, for the most part, is fairly well dressed. There are a few guys, and I don't have to tell you who they are, who leave something to be desired in the fashion department.
I'm not going to say anything. I know exactly who you're talking about. The Gasol, the storyline here outside of what's going on with where this team could land is the Gasol free agency is looming over this team this year, and
I think those are sort of interconnected, right? You know, if they do well again, there's no reason to expect that he'll leave. Like, you have to remember,
unless he just wants to get out of the West.
Was on the Grizzlies when Mark was in high school. Mark spent like his whole life in Memphis. This is not a situation where he would just go to another team just because he wants to be in a bigger market or what have you. I think unless the team is not good this year, I think he winds up staying. I think he might even sign an extension.
The East is easier, though.
That's fine. Some guys like comfort, you know, familiarity.
No, they all want to go to New York.
Yeah, okay.
That's all right.
Listen, if Marc Gasol wants to come down with the Knicks, sign me the fuck up. That would be great. But there are other things to consider than the fact that a team is mine and your favorite. Like, just because the Knicks are our favorite team doesn't mean players want to go there.
I don't understand. I like the premise where they're mine and your favorite teams that they should go there.
Well, that would be nice.
I know. It would be really cool. But you're right, that's not, and I'm split, because I really like this Memphis team, and outside of the fact that I want him on the Knicks, it's a fun group, and I wouldn't want to see him go anywhere else if it wasn't for that.
I love this team. I would take, like, five guys on this team and bring them to the Knicks if I could.
I'd up that more.
I'd take Conley, Tony, Courtney Lee, Gasol, Kufis, Vince.
Pondexter,
yeah. Just give me all of them.
Stokes, Adams as young guys who you could develop.
The Knicks have young guys. I don't need those guys.
I'd rather have Jordan Adams than your boy Shane Larkin.
You want to be able to keep doing podcasts for my network?
I was wondering what kind of threat I was going to get right there. All right, Shane Larkin's own team, the Dallas Mavericks, 49-33 last year. Shockingly lost in the first round of the Spurs. That part wasn't shocking, but they took them to seven games. That was one of the more surprising things in the crazy first round. Rick Carlisle's entering his seventh year with the team. They were second in offensive rating, 22nd in defensive rating, and had the 14th fastest pace. Tyson Chandler's back, along with Chandler Parsons joining the starting lineup, along with Jameer Nelson, Monte Ellison, Dirk. Will they be better at defense this year?
Yeah. I mean, just by virtue of having Tyson there and then not having Calderon there, they'll be better on defense. I do want to, before we get into the rest of the questions, though, they had my favorite summer of any team in the league, if you exclude the fact that they acquired my least favorite player in the league. They got Tyson in the Calderon trade. They signed Dirk for what's now probably the best contract in the league. They got Richard Jefferson, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Rashard Lewis all on the cheap. They got Jameer Nelson cheap. They had a really good summer.
And this in was one of my reasons to be worried for this. The only thing that concerns me, and it's not even really that big of a concern because I just trust Carlisle to make it all work, is there's not a lot of continuity from last year. The rotation players on this team changed a lot. So there's going to be...
Did you see, though? So John Schumann from NBA.com, who does excellent stuff, he does those continuity rankings every year where he, you know, shows what percentage of minutes played from the previous season the team is returning from the year before. Dallas is last this year. Do you want to guess what they were the year before?
Last?
Last.
That's just the way you asked that. I figured that. That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yep. So, I mean, that's not as worrisome to me, especially because, you know, Dirk and Tyson know how to play together. And, you know, Dirk, Monte, Harris, like, those were three, and, you know, Brandon Wright still there also. But Dirk and Monte are sort of the basis of their offense, and that's what's going to make this team go. And Tyson's the basis of the defense, and he's already played with Dirk, so they know how to work together. I don't think the continuity will be that big of an issue.
When you put it like that, that does make sense. And just Carlisle is going to get these guys to click. I mean, if there's anyone...
He's such an incredible coach.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Pop, those would be, if I were to pick any two guys, I mean, that's the direction I would go.
Sorry, what was that?
I said if I were to pick any two guys to have on my bench, it would either be Carlisle or Pop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's not even close.
One storyline that I'm watching this year is I think we saw Dirk's minutes go down a little bit next year. They signed him to a 3-year contract. I think they might try and cut those minutes even a little bit more this year to protect their investment. And they might be able to pull it off if they can build a pretty decent offense around Parsons and Ellis.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of why they went out and got Jefferson, Aminu, and Rashard Lewis. That way you can throw any number of different looks along with Brandon Wright and Greg Smith. You can go big, go small, do a bunch of different things when Dirk is out of the game. And one thing I love that Carlisle does is he staggers his subs such that Dirk spends a significant amount of time late in the first and early in the second quarter playing against backups. He usually takes Dirk out about 6 minutes into the game, and then he'll either leave him out for the rest of the first quarter and start the second, or bring him back in with like 2-3 minutes left in the first and give him another rest midway through the second. That's something that not a lot of teams do. Most teams will leave their star guy in for the whole first quarter, have him sit to start this, you know, 6 minutes of the second quarter, and then finish the half. But Carlisle does it differently, and it helps Dirk a lot.
Your previously mentioned favorite player in the league, Ray Felton, I don't think he really is even going to have to play on this team.
He'll play, but they have plenty of options if they want to minimize him as much as possible.
Yeah.
I think Jameer is clearly the guy who's going to start, you know, especially with Felton suspended for the first, I think it's 2 games, maybe 3 of the year for his weapons charge.
Oh, God. And then Devin Harris is also there. So, I mean, you got two guys you can put ahead of him. Charlie Villanueva, is he going to make that team?
I don't know. It's 4 games for Felton, by the way, on the suspension. But I don't think there's really room for Charlie Villanueva.
He had, like, a box score-wise, he had a couple decent preseason games.
Maybe. Maybe. You know, they have a whole bunch of power forward types already, though, is the thing that maybe he gets squeezed out. Like, he's clearly, I would think, behind Dirk, Wright, Rashard, Tyson, and Greg Smith in their front court game. That's already 5 guys. Plus, then you add Parsons, Jefferson, Aminu, and Jake Crowder. That's 9. Do you need a 10th front court guy, especially when you already have 6 backcourt guys who are going to make the team.
Yeah.
That's already 15.
And you want to keep a guy around like Ricky Ledoux as a young guy who could potentially develop into something. It doesn't seem like there's much room for him. You're right. Finally.
Yeah, and also that construction means that they have to cut Ivan Johnson, which I feel very bad for the person who has to do that.
No, that's not a job I would volunteer for.
But he's not really playing much in the preseason, so.
I think that would be the my... I think if I had to pick any person in the league not to cut, and I was only allowed one person to choose, I think that's my choice.
Yeah, him or, surprisingly, Steve Blake. You know how he has like that those dead eyes? He is supposedly like the biggest badass in the league, knows like all kinds of crazy martial arts type shit, and could destroy anyone.
I had no idea. Has he ever gotten into a fight in a game?
I think people don't want to fuck with him.
That would be amazing if he like drop kicked someone in the middle of the game, martial arts style.
Yeah, here, there's a story from 2010. Don't be deceived by Steve Blake's looks. He does mixed martial arts, knows, like, all kinds of crazy shit. Yeah, he.
I would have never guessed that.
He is, both of his parents are karate black belts. They own a mixed martial arts school. You do not want to mess with Steve Blake.
Oh, and that's through the bloodlines also. That's not just him learning on his own.
Yeah.
That's deep down. Yeah, I ain't fucking with Steve Blake. All right, New Orleans Hornets, the final team we are doing.
Actually, wait, quickly on Steve Blake. A couple of years ago, former HP writer Scott Leedy was talking trash about Steve Blake on Twitter, and Mrs. Steve Blake saw it and started coming at him on Twitter, and it provided one of the funniest HP email thread chains of all time.
I'm assuming he never went and covered a game that Steve Blake was playing in then.
I don't think so, no.
I think I would avoid... that leads to an excellent question. What's your best moment of something getting seen on Twitter that you're like, shit, I wish that person didn't see that?
I don't think I have one.
None? You never got, like, a player favorite one of your things, and you're like, oh, damn it.
It's only been, like, good stuff. Like, Kyle Anderson seeing my mock draft. Or, like, Roy Hibbert seeing my tweet about his... Like, I wrote an article about his hook shot, and he was like, don't give away all my secrets. Those are the only kind of player interactions I've had. I haven't had any negative interactions with players. You know, there was, one player who last season got sort of angry with me in the locker room after a game when I was asking him some questions that he didn't like. But other than that, I've had...
Well, let's hear that story.
No, I'm not going to let people know who that was.
Oh, come on, boo.
Let's just say that there was a player where he was a point guard, and I said that I know... After asking him all different questions about the development of this game and how he's gotten better, worked his way up from a very small role to a solid rotation guy. I asked at the end of our session, why he struggled with turnovers in the pick and roll, and that it seemed like he's delivering passes sometimes a little bit too late or a little bit too high, and he sniped back at me. So that was not fun.
It was right after Vince Carter got traded to the Mavericks, and I asked him about his shot selection. He looked at me like I had 18 heads and went, next question. He's like, all right then, Vince Carter does not like talking about his shot selection. Lesson learned. My other one, Luke Hancock favorited me saying I was happy he got punched in the face in a summer league game. That was kind of awkward.
Luke Hancock?
He was the guy who killed Michigan at the end of the half in the national championship game on Louisville. and he got elbowed in the face during a summer league game.
Oh, okay, yeah, I remember him. And he's not in the NBA, though, right?
No, I don't think he made it. I think he got waived by the Grizzlies. He was on a roster for a preseason for a little bit there. I don't even think he really got a chance to play. And I was completely joking, but I felt bad. Because I never at players intentionally. It's not, whether it's good or bad, I just leave them alone. I try not to bother them on Twitter.
Maybe you should start adding Amari with all of your, I know he's your boy.
I've had someone, like, take my tweets and, like, at him after I wrote something. And that's exactly what I said. Listen, man, I'm...
That's, like, the worst thing on Twitter. When, you know, you say something and someone, all they do is they just do, like, RT and then the player's at, like,
yeah,
get out of here.
Like, if I wanted to include him, I said to the guy, I go, look, I don't say anything to these guys negative or positive. I just leave them alone and don't bother them. That's not what I want to do. That's not what I'm on here for.
Yeah, I mean, other than, like, outright racism and sexism and things like that, that's the worst part of Twitter.
Yeah, there's people are assholes. All right, the Hornets. They went 34-48 last year. Monty Williams is still coaching the team. I forgot to write down how many years. It's not a big deal. Offensive rating, they were 13th. Also better than I thought. I was kind of surprised when I saw that. Defensive rating, they were god-awful, 26th. And they played faster than I thought they did also. They were ranked 9th in the league in pace. That caught me off guard a little bit. Are they really going to start Luke Babbitt at small forward? Like, is this a thing that's going to happen?
No, isn't? I thought Monty said that Tyreek was probably going to start.
Oh, so he's actually using his head. So they're going to do Ashiq, Davis, Holiday, Gordon, and Evans?
I mean, I think so. I could have sworn that I read that Tyreek was going to start.
Okay, that's a step in the right direction. That's good if that's what they're going to do.
I mean, I think he's been coming off the bench the last couple of preseason games just because he's working his way back from that injury. But, or no, he started the last game. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be the starter.
Okay, cool. I thought I read some stuff early in the preseason how they were going to, thinking about starting Luke Babbitt or Darius Miller or someone like that. So that's good. That's a positive. I like that starting five. It's a little weird, but I like it.
I'm a little worried about the spacing. You know, just when you have Tyreek and Ashiq on the court, both, things could get a little bit cramped. But when you have Anthony Davis, I tend to worry about things a little bit less.
And Holiday and Gordon can... I know Gordon's kind of fallen out of favor, but... He's still going to have some gravity to him. He's a player who other teams are going to respect and guard. And Drew Holiday is a very good three-point shooter. So there is some... If you get a little bit creative with the offensive sets, you can be okay because there is some shooting on the court.
Yeah. Gordon actually had a pretty decent season last year when he was on the court. You know, he shot 44% from the field, 39% from three. Got to the line a fair amount, you know, like... 3.5-4 times a game, whatever it was. He was pretty good. Not as good, obviously, as he was in like that last Clipper season, but he was solid.
It's crazy. He was in the conversation with like James Harden as one of the young, up-and-coming two guards in the league, and injuries have just kind of sapped it all away.
Yeah, I remember I wrote something after that season with the Clippers when he was really good, comparing his first few years in the league to Ray Allen's, and they were so, so similar. And I was like, the only thing that can stop this guy from becoming really good, not to say, you know, exactly like Ray Allen, but, you know, a close facsimile, as close as anyone else in the league will get, is getting hurt. And then everything that's happened since then, all he's done is get hurt.
And what's sad is it wasn't like he was a one-dimensional player. He was a well-rounded player. He played,
he got to the line a ton, really good off the bounce.
Defense, too.
Yeah, solid D. I mean, it's sad. Yeah. But he also has had injury problems going back even to Indiana.
Was he banged up his freshman year there? He didn't play?
Yeah, he really did not shoot well at Indiana because he had, like, a really bad wrist injury.
That's right. I remember that with that draft. Okay. Sixth man of the year candidate in an otherwise pretty ugly bench, Ryan Anderson. Do you think they should keep him on this roster, or do you think they're better off trying to move him for something else?
I think it's a good fit on the roster. He can play with Ajik or Davis in the front court. You know, especially this is not a team that has a ton of shooting, especially off the bench. So I think it's good for him to be there. Obviously, you know, $8-9 million a year or whatever it is expensive for a bench player, but, you know, he's going to play a bunch of minutes, so essentially be like a sixth starter.
In 91 minutes together last year, Davis, Anderson, Evans, Gordon, and Holiday had a 120.
I know, they set fire to the league. I've looked this up so many times.
But their defense was almost as gross. Their defense was a 119.8.
Yeah.
I still want to see that group play together.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that with enough time together, they could figure out a way to defend at least competently. And like you see, Davis is taking steps every day to get better. And I mean, Holiday is a good defensive point guard. Gordon should be able to guard at least, you know, at an average level. So you would think that they'd be able to be better on that end when that group plays together.
It's more, and the reasons to be worried, it's more about the bench here.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's
a weak bench.
This is heat level bad.
I mean, the second best player off the bench is Austin Rivers.
Can we start a campaign for Jeff Withey to play 10 minutes a night?
Well, I think they like
Alex Ajinka.
Yeah, is that how you say his name?
I have no fucking idea.
Pronounce it.
Play Jeff Withey.
He also is a little bit stretchier than the other guys in their front court.
But Withey's, like, tall, and he can really protect the rim. He did it well in college in small sample sizes last year. He did it pretty well. He can play.
Yeah, I like him. I think he should play a little bit. Especially, you know, he could be not as good as Ajik, but if you want someone who provides sort of a facsimile of the skill set that he brings, Withey is the closest guy on the roster to being able to do that.
I'm not saying he can be a starter or play 20 to 25 minutes a night right now. Who knows what he can grow into?
Everybody just heard you start the Jeff Withey for MVP bandwagon. I mean, I don't even know how you're going to deny that.
I'm just going to start the hashtag once this podcast gets posted. Jeff Withey for MVP. I've been begging. I wanted him to play last year. I got to see him in person in Phoenix. And he played like 10 to 12 minutes that night. And he played really, really well. And he's someone I watched a decent amount in college. He's a guy I was surprised he didn't go in the first round.
These men who are already older and don't have offensive skill sets tend to fall in the draft.
That's such a shitty draft, though.
Yeah, but the big guys who go in the draft are either really young or have shown themselves to be very good offensive players.
I thought, because it was around the time all the Hibbert verticality stuff was happening, and he showed he could do that really well in college, that a team would take him towards the back end of the first round, being able to use that part of his game specifically.
Well, maybe he would have gone undrafted had that not happened, and that's the reason he went in the second round.
It's fair. And now we've spent way too much time talking about Jeff Withey. So,
can we talk about Anthony Davis?
The storyline. I didn't send you the sheet. That's the storylines. Anthony Davis, watch. Go ahead. What do you got?
I mean, good God, man. That dude. There's so much to say, but at the same time, what can you even say? Like, it will not be very long before he's the best or second best player in the league. He might be the third best player in the league this year. He's that good. He's developing that quickly. He just had maybe the best age 20 season of any player ever. I wrote about it during the season last year, how ridiculous he was, and he continues to be, and he was freaking marvelous in the FIBA Cup this summer, and I mean, the dude is just a freaking monster. It's not fair how good he is at the number of different things that he's good at.
Here's my question with Davis and how good he can be. Does this year start the process where this team starts kind of moving up the ladder and they go, all right, they sneak into the playoffs as the eighth seed, get smoked by whoever the best team is? I mean, you got to get that step out of the way most of the time, especially when you're building like this team is. It's not like they're a bunch of superstars put together like the Miami Heat and they're going to skip the process. This team is most likely going to have to go through what most teams have to do, and it's going to be interesting to see if this is the year that starts.
Oh, this team. I mean, look at the moves they've made over the last few years, and oh God, I really just don't like the way that they've built around Davis. So think about this. They made Davis the first pick of the 2012 draft, right? They have not made a first-round pick since then, and they're not making one again next year. How can you take Anthony Davis and then make zero first-round picks in the next 3 years? Mm-hmm. They traded three first-round picks for Jrue Holiday and Omer Asik. And they traded Robin Lopez in the deal that they gave up, that they got Tyreke Evans and gave him $44 million, and then felt the need to trade another first-round pick for Asik, which they wouldn't have had to do if they had Robin Lopez. Like, I mean, oh God, I hate the way they've built around this guy.
That's why it's bad having a 90-year-old owner sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to do the things that the owner wants, and obviously Tom Benson, like you said, is a very, very old man. You know, he owns the Saints as well. This team is going to be in win right now mode, and that's why they've done the things they've done. But I can't help but think that they'd be better off had they not traded three first-round picks for, like, the 15th best point guard and 20th best center in the league.
And Jrue Holiday is someone I really like and I think is a really good fit with a player like Anthony Davis, because you're going to get that defense on the back end, and you can also have strong defense at the point of attack. But you're right, there just wasn't a reason to go out and make that move.
Right, and you know, Drew's contract is going to look better when the cap goes up, but I also don't think, with the depth at the point guard position, why pay double-digit million dollars to a guy who's not, you know, a top 10 point guard? I think that that's, you know, the opportunity cost there is too high. You could get similar production for less money.
Yeah. And I can't deny that as someone who really likes Holiday. There's no way.
No, he's a perfectly good player. But again, like, you know, aren't there like more than 10 point guards that are better than him?
It's close, and I know some of the advanced numbers through the years on Holiday aren't the best, but he's a very good two-way point guard. He really can get into you on the defensive end, and if he's in the right situation, I think he could really, really thrive.
Yeah, I agree, but I, you know, again, and it's like it's this opportunity cost. So, I mean, just off the top of my head, Paul, Westbrook, Wall, Curry, Lowry, Dragic, Kyrie, Conley, Lillard,
Bledsoe,
Parker, like already that's, you know, 10 guys at his position who are better than him. Why are you going to pay a guy double-digit million to, you know, Ty Lawson to be, you know, outside the top 10 or so guys in his position? I think it's the opportunity cost there is too high.
I'll put it this way. I don't have a problem with the amount he's paid. It's that they paid a first-round pick that you could have had cheaply to go out and get that
first round picks. They gave up Noel and an additional first.
That's where my issue with it is. If he say they drafted him and he was due for an extension and they agreed to that contract, I don't have a problem with it. What they gave up to go and pay for that contract is where my issue is. If that makes sense.
I mean, it's so frustrating to me.
Something pretty cool is coming out at some point this week. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. It might even be out already by the time this podcast runs. The HP preview. 30 to 35 writers contributed. It's, I believe, 210 pages, maybe longer, depending on how the formatting goes when we put it into the various different places. It's going to be $299, a little bit more than it was last year, just because of the amount of time and effort and everything like that that's been put into it. It's fantastic, as it was last year, the year before, and the year before. We've got 8 round tables, 5 long form posts, 3 sections on each team, some funny photoshops, incredible, beautiful infographics about each team, detailing, what they did in the offseason, their cap situation, some of Austin Clemens' shot charts for each team, a couple of our favorite tweets from last year about those teams. It's fantastic. I can't wait for everyone to see it.
What will be the easiest way for people to get it?
It'll be available on Amazon Kindle, as well as if you don't have a Kindle, then it will be on Scribd, where you can download the PDF.
Okay, so make sure, and there will be a link on the actual HP web. HP
yeah,
website.
It'll be cross-linked on out of all of the HP network sites.
All right, so make sure you guys go buy that. Spend your entire weekend reading it. A homework assignment, that's all you have to do.
Yep.
And, all right, we are done with all the divisions. We have a predictions podcast, which I'm still not exactly sure how we're going to do, but that's Jared Dubin. We got one more to go here, and then we will be done with the Podium Game podcast preview series.